This is Ranger Kidwell Ross, editor at World Sweeper. I'm speaking today with Kenneth Young, who is the president of the Young Manufacturing Company, commonly known as TIMCO of Waco, Texas, known around the world, of course. Kenneth, first off, welcome. Thanks for joining me.
You're welcome.
We have the task of talking about the late Tony Libhart, who started his professional career in sweeping as an engineer at TIMCO. If you would, kind of fill in a little bit about that early part of Tony's career, but also give us some background of what the industry was like then. I know you grew up in it. For the people who are new to sweeping, they can kind of have an idea of the state of sweeping back then as well.
Well, thank you. I think my recollection, Tony joined TIMCO back in the middle late 70s. As I recall, his wife taking a position with a local company here in Waco, and Tony came to Waco, Texas, looking for a job, put in an application here at TIMCO. We were in the process of looking for some engineering assistance in our engineering department, and Tony applied, and he had a history with Colson Castor Company as a development engineer. And so anyway, Tony and I, we hit it off, and he came to work, and we were in the throes of developing a product, the Model 210, and so he was able to walk into that project and work with two or three other people in the development of that unit, introduction, which it had started, I think, back in 74 or 5. He worked through that on that project, and through that project he was introduced to regenerative air sweeping, which is obviously that's what TIMCO is, that differentiates us from mechanical sweeping and vacuum sweeping. The industry back then, there was, I guess, two or three, let's say, major contract sweeping companies that TIMCO competed with, Schwartz being one, Mr. Air in California, and there was a Tennant sweeper. Two or three others like Tennant that tried to get into the, attempted to get into the parking lot truck-mounted business, and they had products they introduced for 3 or 4 years, and then they got out of it. But predominantly it was TIMCO, it was Schwartz, it was Mr. Air in those early years on the contracts parking lot side. Tony worked within our engineering department. Obviously, in the early years, it was a lot of pencil drawing work as far as our industry. AutoCAD came in probably in the early, middle 80s, so he participated along with the rest of our staff in getting over into AutoCAD. Tony later on had an interest in marketing. Being a small company, TIMCO probably had 50 to 75 people, and so many people wore many hats and did many things. And so Tony, as well as others, would work in engineering, also work with our distributors that sold our equipment and presentations to customers. And so he had an opportunity to move into our marketing department. He did that for 3 or 4 years, and then I think he moved back over into engineering for a couple of years. Eventually, he and his wife, and I'm only guessing, Ranger, but I'm going to say after 10 or 12 years, 10 to 15 years, decided to move to South Texas. And I think they bought an orange grove. And they moved from Waco, spent a year or so down there. And obviously at that point, we ceased to talk very much. The next thing I knew, he had an opportunity to start and develop a company in Arkansas, which is where he came from. He moved back to Arkansas and started the Aplex Sweeper company. Did that for several years. And then I understand he got together with Mark Schwartz and eventually went to work for Schwartz Industries. That's kind of an overview in a nutshell. The industry was, we had, back in the middle 70s, we had first introduced parking lot sweepers in the late middle to late 60s, and had a very small dealer organization in the middle late 70s, probably 15, 20 distributors across the United States, probably a total of 50 or 60 people working here at TIMCO by 19 in the late 70s and early 80s. And that's about it.
To be clear about where the industry was, though, those were the days when people were selling parking lot sweeping that people really weren't doing. They were out cleaning up by hand and by guess and by gosh, and this was a whole new situation where you had a machine that would handle this, and And it was really a fledgling industry at that point.
I would agree with that. I think by the middle late 70s, it kind of the footprint of parking lot sweepers had taken a hold, and the implementation of truck mounted sweepers was definitely in its infancy. But had that was the way to sweep parking lots. That was definitely the way. It was back in the early 70s, the late 60s that. The parking lot, strip centers, malls were being swept by industrial machines. Tenants, Advance, back then the old Wayne sweepers, Little Wayne industrial sweepers, American Lincolns. And then truck-mounted machines, I think Schwartz and Timco, and back then there was even a Bel Air sweeper, and there was two or three that were out promoting, and those machines, those truck-mounted sweepers, created an industry, and that was in the early 70s. So without a doubt, when Tony showed up at Timco in the middle late 70s, that industry was still new. Products and development of products were new. Timco had been marketing our Model 300 sweeper, Model 350 sweeper, and 600 for many years, but the industry was looking for a high-dump type sweeper. And that's when we started developing the Model 210 sweeper.
Well, I think the industry was also had to be looking for something they didn't have to trailer around and then take off a trailer and then have a very small sweeping footprint and then put back on a trailer and move off to the next location. That must have been a huge innovation for sweeping contractors along with the regenerative air concept.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It definitely changed the marketplace because the smalls and strip centers were in their infancy also in the late 60s. They were being developed. People were leaving the city and moving to the suburbs, and strip centers and malls were being developed in most of the United States by the middle late 60s. That's when I remember the Timco sweep of the Model 300s. People started buying and using those to sweep parking lots.
So there was a demand that came up for a parking lot class of machine. And, you know, one of the things that must have gone hand in hand with that was that there was this new phenomenon of strip malls that came up. And then as those caught on and then got larger and larger and more numerous, then those little industrial sweepers that had done the job okay just a couple of years ago would because the surface area that they'd have to sweep would be relatively small at each account. That would have increased as well, which would really have caused another side of a headache for the contractors out there trying to sell it.
That's right. You know, the malls were being, the strip centers were being developed. 1, 2, 5, 10 acre parking lots were being created. They had to be cleaned. Small industrial sweepers, people would show up, trailer them to the lot, drive them off the trailer, run around in the lot for a little while, come back, dump those little machines in the trailer or on the ground, and then shovel the material up into the trailer.
For anybody who has complained about being out on a dark and stormy night sweeping and dumping directly into a dumpster, think about that. It's pouring down rain or snow or something, and let's dump on the ground and then get out with our shovel and scoop into a dumpster. Well, it must have really been seen as a wonderful innovation.
No, it was fun times. A lot of changes taking place. But that's about it. That's
okay.
What I remember. And then Tony, I believe, went on to do a lot of engineering at Schwartz, as I understand it. And his family, I think, moved to Huntsville, Alabama. My involvement and Tony's involvement with Timco was in the early years from the middle 70s. We kind of got him into the sweeper business, I guess, if you will, because he was working for a caster company out of Arkansas doing engineering work, moved to Waco, got into the sweeper business via Timco, and over the years knew a lot, developed a lot, worked with a lot of people and customers, and think a lot of him.
Well, he was a quality individual to know, that's for sure. It must have been tough on the Timco organization to find that he'd gone out and started his own sweeper company, but on the other hand, you all haven't been hurt from that factor either. You're one of the top manufacturers in the world. So
when he developed it, everybody has a right to do what they need to do, and he worked hard at it and stayed after it, and occasionally we would talk and visit. There was no really hard feelings there. I guess he left us, and like I said, I think he went in the orange grove business. I don't know if you've heard that anywhere else.
I hadn't. That's the first time that I have, and in all the times that I talked to him, that didn't ever come up as well.
Really? Well, I think he moved down there, he and his wife, for a little while. So, anyway.
Thank you very much, Kenneth. It's fun to hear those reminiscences, not only of Tony Liphart, but also of how the industry was back then.
Well, you're welcome, and thank you for giving me an opportunity to make a few comments about Tony. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Again, we've been speaking with Kenneth Young, who is the president of Timco Incorporated, which is one of the leading sweeping companies in America and in the world. This is Ranger Kidwell Roth, editor at World Sweeper, and I'm speaking today with Mark Schwartz. Hello, Mark.
How are you doing?
Doing fine. Unfortunately, you and I are getting together on a sad topic, which is the passing of our old friend and acquaintance, Tony Liphart.
That seems to be happening more and more, Ranger, as we get a little older here.
You and I knew Tony pretty darn well. He was a former chief engineer at Schwartz Industries, I think one of the things we should do in remembering him and to give a little fleshing out of the history of the industry also is to talk about Tony, how you met him, and I'll talk about how I met him and tell a story or two about him, and I think that would make a good remembrance. When's the first time that you heard the name Tony Liphart come up in conversation? How did that happen?
I think I actually met him first at a trade show. I don't know if it was an NPE or whatever it was in those days, but I think that's where I met him.
And about what year are we talking about?
Oh, my goodness. I knew there's going to be a test here. It would have been probably 84 or 5, somewhere in that range.
Okay, early to mid-80s. And then when you actually did business with him, tell that story, if you would.
Well, we had basically had bought out his company and brought the product line to Huntsville and brought over several employees, including Tony and family. And, the addition to the Schwartz product line was immeasurable. I mean, he was a smart guy, and I remember that in those days we were just converting over to AutoCAD two-dimensional, and Tony was the best draftsman I've ever seen. I mean, mechanical drawing, he was awesome. And I remember him saying, "Look, I hope you don't expect me to convert over." And I said, "As fast as you draw, I could care less." And within about a year, he was, of course, up and running on the AutoCAD software. And then, of course, when SolidWorks three-dimensional came around, we adopted that, and he fought it a little bit, but I can tell you, Tony was, he could be really hard-headed, bullheaded, but he was a good guy, and his decisions were crisp, and usually in the long run, if you'd let him think about it a while, he'd come around to doing the right thing. He always did the right thing, so that was, and he ended up being one of the better, AutoCAD guys at Schwartz, as I remember, so.
Well, and his Aplex line, now we can talk a little bit about, prior to that he had his start, as far as I know it, at Timco. I know he had a hand in the design of the 210. He's largely given credit for that. History largely at this point gives him credit for that. I'm sure there were other members of the team at Timco that would have been involved as those things go. He then spun off, built a company called Aplex, A-A-P-L-E-X, and that's the street sweeping, air-based street sweeping company that Schwartz Industries purchased about 1987, and that's when your dad was still at the helm.
I think it was 88.
Okay.
It was either late 87 or early 88, yeah.
Well, and I should be the one remembering that, because my first day in the sweeping industry was the announcement of the purchase of Aplex by Schwartz Industries, and you called me and said that you had previously called me as a consultant working there in Huntsville as a business consultant about a video, and somebody else got that project, and you said at the time that with my writing credentials you'd like to see me put out a newsletter for the contractor base for your customers that were contractors.
Right.
And so you called me kind of out of the blue about 6 months later, said you had purchased a company called Aplex, and would I show up at the kind of handing over of the keys ceremony there at Schwartz Industries in Huntsville and take notes and report on it. And so I handled kind of the publicity for that event, and then That was the lead story in the first SuperVac quarterly that came out in 1988.
Right, that's correct.
That's when I met Tony and Bonnie, and then was around them a lot more.
His son Anthony came over with them, and two daughters, Emily and Deanna.
And Tony was, I always saw him as being very confident, unflappable, had a great sense of humor.
He had. That's probably the thing most people don't understand about Tony, is he was a jokester, buddy. He always had something up his sleeve. And I told a story at the funeral about him coming into my office. And, of course, he's an old Pennsylvania boy. He had a temper on him. And he's a big guy. Tony's a pretty good-sized guy. And he came in my office one day after we had blended the Aplex into the Schwartz line, and he was obviously upset about something to where his forehead was, you know, glowing red. And he said, "Mark, if this is the way it's going to be, I'm out of here today." And I was like, "You know, what are you talking about?" And he said, "I just had somebody tell me when I questioned a paint job on one of the Aplex product lines that that's as good as it gets for Aplex." And I said, "Tony, you know me better than that. I'm going to go call the team together, and I'll have a meeting." So we had the whole team standing out there, and Tony standing there. He had calmed down a little bit, and my paint lead was standing there. We're walking around this Aplex. I think it was a 2020 at those days, or it's the old 222, but we're walking around the hoppers up in the air, and one side of it's got a big run in the paint job, and the other side of it looks like you actually missed some of the, well, there's not enough paint on it. And my paint lead was walking around it, and I said, "What do you think of that paint job?" Now, everybody's standing around. I got a crew of about, in those days, probably about 60 folks standing around. And he looked at it, folded his arms, and looked back at me and Tony and said, "I think that looks really good for an Aplex." And I said, "You're fired." And I took the number two guy, and I said, "Now you're in charge. What do you think?" He said, "I think it looks terrible." And I said, "That's the right answer." Tony walked the guy to the door, and I never saw the guy again as far as at Schwartz. And I think from that point on he realized that, and we had a big meeting with the whole team and said, "Look, this is not us and them anymore. Even though we used to be fierce competitors, we're together. And we've got to act like that or this isn't going to work." And Tony, I think I gained a lot of respect for Tony that day. He seemed fairly pleased, and he was absolutely right. But Tony was fair like that. He was one of those guys that give you an opportunity to correct a wrong. And that's not a funny story, but there are so many funny stories that he would, you know, you'd walk by his office and he would either be eating these big hard pretzels or he'd have a block of cheese. And he knew I couldn't. I always stopped by for that. But he knew I couldn't stand smoked oysters. And he'd have a can of smoked oysters or sardine or something that was disgusting. And he would always come in with them all arranged on a plate and put them under my nose. And say, "Sure you don't want any?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'm sure, Tony. I'm positive I don't want any." So he was always pulling something like that. He grabbed me one day as we're going out at about 6 o'clock one night, and he was telling a story about. This woman stopped him at the grocery store, and as we're walking out, he's telling me the story. He said, "Yeah," and she said, "I know your name's John." He said, "No, my name's not John." He said, "Well, yeah, you know," and she kept going on and on. As he's telling me this, we're walking out the door, and we get out to the parking lot at Schwartz, and this story's going on and on and on and on and on. He said, and then we got out to the car, just like we're out here, and he said, "She fell down to her knees and grabbed me by the leg and started pulling my leg, just like I'm pulling yours."
That's
like,
right.
Tony Libhart, you are, there's something wrong with you. So he thought that was so funny. He used to always laugh about that. And I'd see him in church every once in a while. He would attend The Rock out here where I go, and he would occasionally come in there, and he'd always bring up one of those stories and say, "You remember when I did that?" And I said, "Yeah, I do remember. You got me." So, but that's the kind of humor he had. He was always into a good prank.
Well, that made him fun to be around. And,
absolutely.
You know, and he was also very competent in his
design.
Talk about what the Aplex purchase did for Schwartz Industries at the time.
Well, we had a high dump already, but we didn't have anything small that was good. Everything we had on the small side was lacking in design. You got to remember, it was design in those days for us was. Or before those days was a notepad and paper. There wasn't a lot of there wasn't a lot of time spent in the drafting room because there wasn't a lot of draftsmen at Schwartz Industries. So, but when Tony came on board, he kind of organized the engineering department. Jim Adair was over the engineer. He's a VP, but he was over engineering, and he helped Jimmy get that thing in, wrapped up and organized like it ought to be. And then, of course, the computers came along and fixed that pretty quick. But, yeah, I mean, when Tony came on board, we really didn't have archive drawings like we should, and he helped get all that put into place. And the design, there were issues we'd been fighting, you know, airflow issues that he automatically brought a 15 years of experience with him or 10 years of experience with him, and you know, some questions we've been scratching our head on, he answered in about 15 minutes. So he definitely gave us a good anchor as far as design goes. And of course, his product line was the A7. Which was called the 44 Magnum, which actually evolved into the A4000, actually A3000, then the A4000, and then he built the A9, and he and Jimmy built the A9, and there was the A9000, which was a larger one, which I think they still sell today, and there was a bunch of smaller products, the 222 and the 220, which were high dump, low dump, smaller units that were designed to be mounted on the old cab chassis Toyotas, which have since gone away. But
and that's just to break in, that's a sweeper that some of the contractors listening out there will say, I still have my 222.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, they have put new chassis under them, rebuilt them, done whatever they can to keep those machines rolling. I know.
It's amazing. If you look in sweeper markets, you'll still see one every once in a while, and it sells for, I can remember selling a brand new for $13,900, truck and all. And I still see them in there, and they want, you know, $7,500 for one that's got, you know, half a million miles on it. Hopper's been redone and patched and whatever. So, he built a good product. He built a really good product. And he helped put us on the map. Plus, it took away a huge competitor. Every time we would run into Aplex, it was always a price fight. So it helped us put profit back in the business. And, you know, contractors may not like to hear that, but I got to tell you, you want profitable sweeper manufacturers, or you're never going to continue the product line and see the improvements you need to see. I mean, the money that went back into Schwartz, that really put us in the municipal business and really helped us grow Schwartz Industries to where it was when we sold it.
Well, and the credibility, not only the design credibility, but you know, the people who were knowledgeable about the industry and knew the credibility that Tony brought on the municipal air side of design would enhance the Schwartz credibility in that product line. Because your real difficulty getting started, as I recall, was that you had something like 70% of the parking lot sweeper marketplace, but nobody knew the word Schwartz in the municipal marketplace whatsoever.
We really didn't know anything about blast orifice technology. I mean, we really didn't. I mean, we knew what it was, and we knew it was out there. We knew Timko was the innovator and had come out with it. But you know, how it worked, what made it work. You know, those are art, not science questions a lot of times. And you know, Tony knew that. He knew exactly how to do that. A couple of his machines had it, so we learned a lot about blast orifice technology and how to improve it. And some of that stuff is broken new markets open in Australia, and I believe somewhere it would have been bigger in England had it been allowed to get over there. But anyway, long story short is that Tony brought a lot of that municipal sweeping mentality, and even when we got into the mechanical sweepers, he wasn't much better on mechanicals than we were, but he had enough sweeping experience to know what to expect in a municipal situation. So he knew it enough to where he could help guide us, and he did. He helped us a lot on the municipal side.
Well, and he had, as Aplex, he was the chief cook and bottle washer, too. So
yep.
He was familiar with the sales end and how to market to municipalities. I'm sure he brought some of that into the table at Schwartz.
Oh, absolutely. And he also, you know, he would go on service calls. If we had an issue we couldn't figure out, he would go out on a service call no matter what unit it was. And you know, he's been, and you know, I've called him up at 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 o'clock at night and said, hey, I need you to leave now and go fix a problem, and he would be on it. So I mean, he's one of those guys that's on the team that you really can't build a company without.
Yeah, he was on the team.
Yep.
That's it. You could end the story. He was ready to do for the customer, for the company, And I'm sure for his family too. You know, there are those stories as well that he was very rock solid and just a fine individual throughout. So, and that's not just platitudes because he's gone. That's just how he was.
No, he was you know, running into him at church and stuff like that every once in a while. It was nice because even though we're competitors, that was kind of neutral, and we could talk a little bit about the industry. And I'm gonna miss him. He's definitely one of the old guys that we're all becoming here, and I'm glad to see that you're putting this on an archive to where people can remember, because there's a lot of things. I mean, we're just scratching the surface. There's a lot of things about Tony that you just would, if you worked with him every day, you'd really appreciate him, because he was a great guy.
Well, and that was this when you took over the Aplex line. And integrated that into Schwartz Industries. The industry was really a lot different than that, too. There were just a few central manufacturers, and the demographics of the industry certainly were different.
Well, what's really funny is I look back, and I never liked Tony's Aplex business model, where you're not a manufacturer, you're an assembler, basically. And I have to laugh, because on bad days I'm thinking, what have I done? But on good days, I look at our Victory business model, and it's pretty similar to the way Aplex started. So, you know, you don't really want to run out there and spend $2 million on a press brake and a laser and a bunch of equipment. So you subcontract that, which gives you the ability to not have to design around your equipment, which is something else that's a negative when you do your own manufacturing. But there's a lot of positives with manufacturing your own product, like we did at Schwartz. But, you know, we always knew what our limitation was on the brake and the burners, and we designed around that. Well, the good news is at Victory, I don't have to do that. I can say, here's what we want to build. Where do we go get it built at? And the negative is you have to have so much more money for inventories and things like that, or you have to wait longer for parts to come off. I can't do one at a time efficiently when I'm subcontracting. So there's negatives, pros and cons, but this is the model we've chosen, and we're going to keep moving forward. But really, that's really the old Aplex model, kind of. There's a lot of similarities.
Is there anything else that we should be saying here? I think we've pretty much covered it. If there's anything else, say so.
Other than there's obviously going to be a lot of good sweeper guys up in heaven, and I can't wait to get there and see them. Well, I mean, I can wait, but it's one of those to where I can hear the old stories being told now with him and my dad up there. I can just imagine. But there's a lot of the old guys that I look at the industry, and that age is cresting. In your newsletter, I noticed that we'd also lost one of the old group and the old leaders in this industry, old Dick Grassi out of New York, and he was, you know, he reminds me a lot of the Tony kind of guy, because he was, even though we were competitors, he was always complimentary. He was always talking to me. He was encouraging to me as a kid, and that's kind of the way when I met Tony at the trade shows. He never, you know, talked down to you. Or, you know, he was always, you know, you were a sweeper guy, and he was too, and you kind of felt that way when you got done talking with him.
Yeah, Dick Grassi was one of the first Timco dealers, maybe the first. We look back, and even when I'm talking with my friends at Timco, and I don't think anybody really knows for sure if he was the absolute first or not.
I thought that article was great, though, and I think Timco actually wrote that. But it was that was some of those pictures. God, I wish there was some way that all of those old type pictures could get published, because those are some great pictures. You know, you didn't realize some of the stuff that Timco had done on some sweepers with the curb brooms on a cab over, and you know, I looked at that and said, "Gosh, that looks like something we did back in the old days." I mean, it was really good to see that. So.
Yeah, and it's nice having this information about members of the industry. Times do change. You know, this all started out with Benjamin Franklin sweeping in front of his shop, and then convincing everybody else on the street to do the same, and that it would be good for business. So,
well, and you look at the generations at Timco that's been in this business, and I've been sweeping since I was 6, and I'll be 54 this month. It's what I do. You know, whether I'm successful at it or start over tomorrow, you never know what's going to happen. The industry is something that I've grown to really like and love, and it's what I do. So I plan on being in this till the good Lord takes me out.
That's what he did to Tony Libhart, who, on the other hand, lived to a ripe old age and was able to stay at work, which was his passion.
Well, he just, so that's another piece of the story. I remember Tony coming in and talking with him, and I said something. I said, Tony, when are you going to retire? And you could almost see this. I don't know if he was sad or if he was mad, because Tony usually didn't hold back his emotions. And he said, I'll never retire. He said, you'll either have to throw me out of here or carry me out of your feet first. And I was like, well, okay, you know, that's fine. I'm not trying to run you off. I was curious. And he said, all my brothers had retired. And when they retired, they had died, and I don't remember the time frame, but it was a short period of time. And he said, so I'm going to work until the good Lord takes me out of here, if that's okay with you. And I said, that's absolutely fine with me. And I think he actually worked right up to the end, if I'm not mistaken. I know he was still over there. I don't know if he was still chief engineer or not, but I know that he was contributing every day.
He was. That's my understanding as well. We could all do well to be able to live that life. So he
absolutely
lived his life doing what he wanted to do. My guess is was a very satisfied individual. So,
yep, I'm going to miss him. I am going to miss him. He's one of a kind.
Well, this is Ranger Kidwell Ross. It is November 7th, 2012. We've been talking about Tony Liphart, who unfortunately left the industry and this plane of the planet on October 23rd of 2012. Former chief engineer of Schwartz Industries, owner of Aplex, and before that, designer at Timco. So thank you very much, Mark, and appreciate your reminiscences.
I appreciate the opportunity, and keep up the good work.
Thank you.